Imagine for a second that you are tasked with building a brand new software service completely from scratch. You decide to bring in an AI assistant to help you do the heavy lifting, which, makes sense given the current state of technology.
Yeah, everyone is doing it right now.
Right. Now, if you are like most people, you probably think the AI's primary job in this scenario is just to write the code. You tell it what you want the service to do, it spits out the logic, and boom, you have a working application ready to deploy.
I mean, that is the dream, right?
Exactly. But according to a truly fascinating stack of internal engineering documents we are exploring today for this deep dive, the actual code, the internal logic of the application itself, is by far the easiest part of the entire process.
Oh, it is the absolute least of your worries when pushing something to a production environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we tend to operate under this assumption that the code is the product. We like focus on the functions and the algorithms. But in a modern enterprise system, the code is just a small, isolated gear. That gear has to fit perfectly into a massive, highly specific operational machine that already exists.
And today's deep dive is all about what happens when that operational machine meets an AI. We're looking at a real engineering team's retrospective. They attempted to build an AI-assisted service from the ground up, and we have their raw, unvarnished notes. We have their updated, somewhat battle-scarred guidance on how to actually talk to the AI.
They definitely learned some hard lessons.
They really did. And we're going to walk through this massive, exhaustive 17-point deployment checklist they had to invent just to keep things from falling apart at the finish line. Our mission today is to uncover exactly why AI completely fails at the invisible stuff in software development, and how you can manage AI to actually ship a service that is ready for the real world.
It's a really crucial topic.
So whether you are a technical lead prepping for your next sprint, or you are just someone curious about how AI is fundamentally changing the modern workplace. Okay, let's unpack this.
To understand why this massive 17-point checklist was even necessary, we first have to look at the trigger event.
The Greenfield Sprint.
Right, the Greenfield Sprint. The engineering team in question decided to build a feature flag service for an application called RX Photo.
Okay.
They wanted to back it with LaunchDarkly, and they wanted to build it from scratch using AI-assisted development. And importantly, they were targeting their real existing production infrastructure.
Just for a bit of context for anyone listening, a feature flag service acts like a traffic cop for an application's features.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it.
It allows developers to turn certain features on or off for specific users without deploying new code. Because of that, it needs to be incredibly fast.
Super
It
fast.
is constantly checking to see if a feature should be visible. So the team sits down, they prompt the AI, and on the very first try, the AI actually nails some surprisingly complex elements.
The scope the AI covered successfully in that first single iteration is objectively impressive. I mean, it didn't just write a basic script. It scaffolded a full microservice architecture. It generated a complete FastAPI service with very clean, functional endpoint.
Like the health checks and stuff.
Exactly. It knew to provide a standard health check endpoint and an evaluation endpoint for the flags. It even properly handled, authenticated user validation against the primary database.
Wow.
Yeah, and it set up the correct fallback defaults in case the third-party LaunchDarkly service went down.
That's actually amazing for one prompt. And I noticed it didn't stop at the application logic either. The AI also started writing the infrastructure
It
code.
did. The AI successfully created the basic AWS Cloud Development Kit, the CDK infrastructure.
Wait, it wrote the CDK code.
Yes. To put that in perspective, it wrote the code that tells Amazon Web Services to spin up the actual servers, the EC2 hosts.
Oh, wow.
It configured an application load balancer, which is crucial for distributing incoming web traffic across multiple servers so no single server gets overwhelmed.
Right.
It configured WIP53 to handle the complex DNS web routing. It even built the skeleton for a GitHub Actions pipeline, meaning it set up the automated workflow for testing and synthesizing the code.
And it even wrote Markdown API documentation, plus an importable Postman collection, so the engineers could test the endpoints manually.
Which is such a time saver.
Right. When I was reading through this initial sprint, I kept thinking about it like hiring an incredibly fast, talented interior decorator.
Okay, I like that.
You ask them for a modern living room, and in 5 seconds flat, they give you the perfect couch, an amazing rug, the lighting is flawless, the TV is perfectly mounted, it looks beautiful. But the catch is, the AI assumes this beautiful room exists, floating in a completely empty void. It doesn't know about the rest of the house.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. AI models are trained on billions of lines of boilerplate code, basic tutorials, and open source repositories.
Right.
Because of that training data, they are absolutely phenomenal at scaffolding a bounded box.
Right.
If you define the boundaries of the application, it fills that box with pristine, logically sound code.
Because that's what tutorials look like.
Exactly. But as any cloud engineer knows, software does not live in a vacuum. It lives in a highly complex, fiercely guarded ecosystem. You have legacy private networks, incredibly strict security policies, and very specific operating system configurations.
Which brings us to the invisible edges of software development. The disconnect between that pristine room the AI built and the messy reality of the team's actual AWS environment is where things completely fell apart.
Completely face-planted.
Yeah. When the team took this beautiful, pristine code and tried to actually deploy it, they ran into a series of operational hurdles. Let's look at the networking first, because the AI made some massive assumptions here.
Huge assumptions. The AI operated on the assumption that it was deploying into a generic, wide-open network.
Like a tutorial.
Right. It used non-VPC identifiers and assumed all the subnets were uniform and publicly accessible. But enterprise deployments just don't work like that. The team was deploying into a virtual private cloud, or VPC.
Which is like a walled garden.
Think of a VPC as a highly secured private neighborhood within AWS with very specific routing rules and private subnets.
Because the AI is trained heavily on basic tutorials found on GitHub, which, you know, rarely feature complex enterprise-grade private network topologies, it just defaulted to the easiest, most generic network setup.
Precisely. The team had to go back and force the infrastructure code to support specific VPC identifiers and names. They had to make the code actively resolve the network via AWS commands to find the correct internal subnets.
Jeez.
Until they built that bridge, the AI's infrastructure stack couldn't even create basic security groups because it didn't understand the neighborhood it was trying to build in.
So we fixed the network, and the servers can finally talk. But then they hit a second wall. Wait, if the code synthesized perfectly on the engineer's local machines, why did it crash the second they tried to run it in the cloud?
Because of identity and access management, or IAM.
Ah, permissions.
Yeah, this is a classic separation of compile time versus runtime. Synthesizing the code locally just means translating the instructions into a cloud formation template.
Okay.
The code was syntactically perfect, so it synthesized fine. But execution requires authority. The AI wired up the servers to exist, but it completely missed the granular, real-world permissions required to actually operate within the company's environment.
It's like you gave it an address, but you didn't give it the keys to the front door.
That's a very good way to put it. Specifically, the AI failed to grant a permission called Kilometers Decrypt.
Oh, for the secrets manager.
Exactly. Without that, the new service couldn't read its own encrypted passwords and tokens from the AWS secrets manager.
That's a problem.
Even worse, the AI forgot to include an S3 GET object permission.
Wait, so it couldn't download from S3?
Right. This meant the servers literally lacked the legal authority to reach into the cloud storage bucket and pull down the deployment artifacts, the actual code they were supposed to run.
It built a server that wasn't legally allowed to download its own brain.
Exactly.
And the issues didn't stop at network permissions. We have to talk about the operating system mismatches.
Oh, this part is fascinating.
The AI wrote all these automated bootstrap scripts. The scripts that run when the server first turns on to install dependencies, assuming the servers were running an operating system called Amazon Linux. But the team's actual environment was using Ubuntu.
This is another fascinating artifact of how these models are trained.
How so?
Well, if you are generating AWS deployment scripts, the large language model will heavily favor AWS documentation and its weights. And AWS documentation naturally defaults to Amazon Linux.
Oh, that makes total sense.
But because the team used Ubuntu, every single package manager command the AI wrote was fundamentally useless.
It's like writing a flawless recipe in Spanish and handing it to a French chef.
Yeah.
The instructions are technically perfect, but the recipient fundamentally does not speak the language.
Exactly the problem.
Yeah.
Amazon Linux uses a package manager called Yum, while Ubuntu uses apt.
Right.
The team had to manually go into the bootstrap scripts, switch all the syntax to apt behavior, and even add specific overrides like installing the AWS command line interface via a tool called Snap.
That sounds tedious.
It is. If your Bootstrap script fails because the operating system doesn't understand your basic installation commands, your deployment halts, the elegance of those FastAPI endpoints we mentioned earlier becomes completely irrelevant.
Okay, I understand the networking and the OS issues. Those are environmental.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one failure that seemed to bridge the gap between environment and the actual code logic.
Mm-hmm.
The AI wrote the code to connect to the PostgreSQL database. But the way it went about it.
Yeah, the database connection.
Wait, isn't opening a brand new database connection for every single request like running outside to turn the city's main water valve on and off every time you want to wash your hands?
It absolutely is.
How did the AI think that was a good idea for a high-frequency feature flag service?
Your water valve analogy is spot on. It is wildly inefficient, especially for a service that needs to return answers in single-digit milliseconds.
Yeah.
But if we analyze how the model thinks, we can understand the failure. The AI optimizes for functional, logically simplistic code. Opening a connection, running a query, and immediately closing it is the simplest, cleanest way to ensure a fresh state without memory leaks.
But the AI doesn't inherently understand the physical constraints of a hot path in a production environment.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't factor in that establishing a full TCP connection and negotiating an SSL handshake takes physical time and compute resources.
Right.
If a feature flag service is doing that thousands of times a second, it will completely crush your database server with connection overhead.
So what do they do?
The team had to rip that entire architecture out and implement a threaded connection pool. That allows the service to open a small, set number of connections once and simply reuse them for incoming requests.
And reading the retrospective, this felt like a major turning point for the team. They noted that fixing the database connection wasn't just a minor patch, it was a structural refactoring.
Huge difference.
Right. When an AI fundamentally misunderstands runtime performance and concurrency, you can't just tweak a single line of code to fix it.
You have to redesign the underlying model of how the application interacts with its dependencies. And this cascading series of failures, the generic subnets, the missing IAM permissions, the Ubuntu mismatch, the database connection exhaustion, it all led the team to a massive realization.
Which was?
Because the AI cannot guess these invisible constraints. You cannot approach it with simple instructions. You cannot just say, build me a feature flag service.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The team realized they had to completely revolutionize how they prompted the AI. They moved away from asking it for favors and started establishing rigid, almost legal-style contracts with the model.
The new prompt guidance document they produced reflects a profound shift. It requires structured prompt blocks. You are no longer just outlining the desired logic. You are spending the majority of your prompt explicitly defining the reality of the environment the AI is entering.
The first rule in their new guidance is to state the AWS reality up front.
Right.
You have to tell the AI exactly what resources already exist. You instruct it to reuse existing NAT gateways. You feed it the specific VPC endpoint identifiers. You tell it which Route 53 DNS zones to rely on. You have to meticulously map out the dimensions of the room before you ever let the decorator start picking out furniture.
They also found they had to explicitly specify their continuous integration and continuous deployment, their CI/CD rules, before the AI even attempted to write the pipeline workflow.
Because in the first iteration, the AI just assumed any branch could deploy to production, right?
Yes, which is a massive security and stability risk for any enterprise.
I can imagine.
The new prompt guidance forces the human engineers to explicitly state the corporate policy, like feature branches are only allowed to run tests. Manual deployments must target exactly one environment, and they must execute without side effects.
They even had to define the nature of the deployment itself.
Yeah.
In that first sprint, the AI assumed that just uploading a new zip file containing the code into a cloud bucket was the end of the job. It completely forgot that the servers actually needed to be signaled to pull down that new code and restart themselves.
A pretty critical step.
Yeah. So the new prompt template demands immutable artifacts and dictates that a code-only change must reliably trigger a rolling infrastructure update.
This brings us to a fascinating prompt technique they developed to handle third-party dependencies.
Oh, the LaunchDarkly thing.
Exactly. During the initial sprint, the service started up fine, but immediately crashed at runtime because the AI had hallucinated the initialization parameters for the LaunchDarkly SDK. It wrote code for a generic version of the SDK, not the specific version the team actually had installed.
The pattern 3 prompt trick. I found this part brilliant. How exactly does a prompt force an AI to verify a real-world dependency?
Pattern 3 is essentially a multi-step prompt that forces the AI into an investigative loop.
Okay.
Instead of just saying, write the SDK initialization, the prompt dictates a sequence. Step 1, write a shell script to check the specific pin version of the installed SDK in our environment.
All right.
Step 2, execute that check and read the output. Step 3, only after verifying the exact version and reading its specific documentation, write the initialization code. You are forcing the AI to observe the reality of the system before it makes assumptions.
It is a profound shift in the engineering workflow. It sounds like the human's role is no longer writing the for loops and the conditional statements.
Mm. The AI can write the algorithms faster and, in many cases, more cleanly. The human's job has elevated. The engineer is now responsible for defining the boundaries, enforcing the corporate compliance rules, and translating the messy operational reality of the business into highly structured constraints that an LLM can parse.
Wow.
You are transitioning from a traditional coder into a hybrid systems architect and compliance officer.
That is a wild transition to wrap your head around. But the documents show that even with this ultimate, highly constrained, legal contract-style prompt, well, the team realized they still needed a safety net.
Always.
You simply cannot trust the output implicitly and push it into a production environment. And that realization is what birthed the absolute crown jewel of this retrospective, the 17-point AI service build checklist.
This checklist is intentionally exhaustive. It is designed to act as a mandatory practical gate before any engineer is allowed to call an AI-generated service complete.
Makes sense.
The entire purpose of this document is to force explicit human decisions before deployment, drastically reducing the agonizing rework they experienced in the first sprint.
I want to look at a few of these specific steps because they really highlight the trauma of that greenfield experiment.
Let's do it.
Step 1 is titled Product and Service Scope. But it doesn't just ask what the service is supposed to do. It demands that the engineer explicitly confirm what the service must not own. Why is defining that negative space so critical when working with AI?
Because large language models have a known tendency toward scope creep.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. If you tell an AI to build a feature flag service and you vaguely mention that it will interact with user data, the AI might try to be overly helpful and architect a complete user management database right alongside the flags.
Oh, wow.
By forcing the human to explicitly define what the service must not own, saying the service will not manage user identities, you establish rigid guardrails. You ensure the microservice actually stays micro.
Then we skip down to step 11, runtime bootstrap. This step forces the human engineer to manually confirm the operating system family, the package manager, and the required network access for installation scripts.
The Ubuntu check?
Exactly. It acts like a giant sticky note on the monitor asking, "Did you remember that we speak Ubuntu, not Amazon Linux?"
It forces you to validate the fundamental assumptions the AI made about the host environment. You have to manually verify how the Python virtual environment is created and what system-level dependencies are required. It is designed to catch those brittle, tutorial-based assumptions before they crash a deployment.
But the most vital step on this entire 17-point list, at least to me, is step 16. It's simply titled Refactoring Warning Signs.
Oh, that's a good one.
And it gives engineers a literal diagnostic list of symptoms that indicate they need to stop patching the AI's code and fundamentally rewrite the underlying architecture.
This step is crucial for anyone using AI for code generation because it addresses the cognitive load of debugging. The checklist warns that if your configuration needs keep growing, but the AI's configuration model can't cleanly represent them, like when they try to patch the VPC lookups with endless one-off conditionals you have to stop.
Or if your runtime performance is bottlenecked by repeated setup work on a hot path, like opening a brand new database connection for every single request.
Precisely. There is a brilliant line in that section of the document. Multiple fixes keep addressing symptoms of the same design assumption.
That's so true.
When you are working with AI, it is incredibly tempting to just prompt it to write one more band-aid, one more if statement to handle a new edge case. Step 16 acts as an intervention.
Yeah.
It tells the engineer to stop treating the symptoms, discard the AI's structural assumption, and refactor the underlying model.
The retrospective summary points this out perfectly. If you utilize this checklist at the start of your project to inform how you build your prompts and then validate your service against it again before you attempt to release, you drastically reduce those architectural rewrites.
You save days of work.
You catch the missing IAM permissions and the bad networking assumptions while they are just text on a screen before they ever reach a server.
And that leads to a quote in the summary that I think captures the essence of this entire experiment. They wrote, "The failure pattern in AI-assisted service builds is usually not missing the service code itself. It is missing one of the operational constraints."
Wow.
It is almost never the algorithmic logic. It is always the environment.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? Whether you are a senior platform engineer overseeing a massive cloud deployment, or you're just someone using a chatbot to help automate a spreadsheet for your weekly schedule, the core lesson translates perfectly.
It really does.
AI fundamentally assumes a blank slate. It operates as though your project exists in a perfect, frictionless void. Your greatest value, your superpower in an AI-driven workflow, is your knowledge of context. Your value is providing the boundaries, the corporate rules, and the messy pre-existing reality that the AI cannot see.
The human provides the map, the AI drives the car. But if you fail to explicitly mark where the cliffs are, the AI will happily drive right off them, writing perfectly efficient code the entire way down.
I think that captures the dynamic perfectly. But, you know, stepping back and looking at all of this, the exhaustive prompt guidance, the multi-step verification tricks, the massive 17-point checklist, the constant exhausting need for humans to translate their messy reality into something the AI can safely process, it does leave me with one final, slightly unnerving thought to ponder. Right now, we are spending an incredible amount of time and intellectual energy teaching humans how to painstakingly map out their existing network topologies, their specific CI/CD pipelines, and their granular security policies just to spoon-feed them to the AI.
Sure.
We are acting as the ultimate highly paid translators for the machine. But if AI eventually evolves to a point where it can automatically scan, ingest, and natively map out our messy real-world infrastructures entirely on its own, what exactly will be left for the human to check off on that list?
That is the million-dollar question.
When the interior decorator learns how to automatically measure the house, find the hallway, and unlock the front door without us having to draw a map, maybe the code won't just be the easiest part of the process. It might be the only part. Keep that in mind the next time you ask an AI to build something from scratch.